It's Your Turn with Dave Mullarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's Your Turn. Weekdays from 1230 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's Your Turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's Your Turn with Dave Mullarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn. Where did the weekend go, huh? Wow. Well, I know. And it's June 11th, for goodness sakes. We are rapidly heading toward the middle of June. We'll be there by the end of this week. And we'll be officially in summer in a little over a week. Summer arrives, according to the astronomers at least, on June 21st. That's Thursday of next week. We had summer for a while, but we've kind of gone into a little slump here over the past few days. Last Friday was still okay, didn't have much sun. But we slumped over the weekend, didn't we? Yes. Temperatures not doing too much. Yesterday we barely touched on 70. Spent most of the afternoon in the 60s, and here in Butler, at least, there wasn't any sun yesterday at all. There were some places in western Pennsylvania that had some sun, and there were some places that had some torrential downpours yesterday, too. Today, it's been cloudy all day. Looked like it was trying to brighten up a little bit mid-morning, but it never really happened. Pretty solid cloud cover out there. And as a result, it's a little cool. It's 68 degrees. The normal high for us on this date, June the 11th, is 78. There's also a little bit of a breeze, too. About 8-9 miles an hour, and when that kicks up, you feel it, especially without any sun, huh? Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll be back to the hot stuff here before too much longer. Open talk to kick off the program today. We have guests later. We are going to be chatting today with a physician from Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers. Also today, we're going to be chatting with John Rigetti and Larry Berg about an event coming up in connection with the Community Health Clinic of Butler County. So all of that to come, but we kick it off with Open Talk here on the It's Your Turn program today. Open Talk right now, 283-2525 is our number, 283-2525. I would love to talk with someone who has an Alexa, an Amazon Echo, or perhaps one of the other artificial intelligence devices. Google has one. The Amazon Echo seems to be the popular one. I have been chatting with, there are some people here at the radio station who have them at home. There are some who do not. I've been trying to figure out whether or not that people really use them. I mean, is this just the latest gimmick? The latest must-have, so to speak, or at least they try to convince you that it's a must-have. Or if you have one, do you really use it all the time? I don't have one, so I can't give you any personal experience. But if you have one of these devices, I'd love to talk to you about whether or not you find it truly useful. Or is it something that you purchased because you are hearing about it on radio and TV, and you thought you had to get it, and now it just sits there? Or do you use it a lot? 283-2525 is the number, 283-2525. I'm sure most of you heard this story a couple of weeks back regarding a couple whose Echo, Alexa, accidentally came on, recorded their conversation that they were having in the room, and then sent it to the husband's boss, of all things. Now, there was no indication as to just what the conversation was, but I mean, if you have one of these devices, are you worried about it accidentally activating and then listening to everything that you're saying in the room? I don't know. I've talked to some people here at the station, and they say they use it quite a bit. I don't know. It's, you have it in one room in a house, right? So do you have to stay in that room all the time to use it? I'm seldom in the same room of the house for any length of time. Maybe in the evening, you know, watching a little TV, but other than that, I'm moving around. I'm neutral on it. I'm just wondering whether or not they're really useful at this stage. Will they be at some time in the future? Well, who knows? 283-2525 is our number. It's Open Talk, 283-2525. Hi, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave.
Hi.
I would just comment on the Alexa.
Yes.
We have one. We're older people. Daughter just thought we needed it. We have it set up in our kitchen.
I'm not sure.
And, whoops, she came on just hearing her name. Well, and also, when your radio station says, Alexa, what's in the news, it'll come on.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
So I just want to make sure I understand you. If you've got the radio on and we're running a promo and it hears Alexa, then it automatically activates, huh?
Absolutely. Hmm. Yes, and just now it came on, just me telling you that.
Do you worry about it activating accidentally and then recording what everybody's saying in the room?
Yeah, I listened to all that on the news carefully, and I think you're a fool not to be a little concerned. Although ours is in our kitchen, and do we use it often? I probably use it every day because I'll just ask what the weather's going to be. That's so convenient. And then another kind of cute thing is, we were watching a movie one night, and my husband was wanting to know, when did George C. Marshall die, or blah, 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 and, or George C. Scott, is it, that was playing in Patton?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Anyway, you know, instead of just raffling your brain, I just walked out and asked her, and she told us. And so that's kind of neat there. It's amazing, you know. And then I have a child that lives in Florida, and it's kind of cool to just, what's the weather doing there today? So you're always kind of up on it.
So you ask specifically for a location whenever you're checking
mm-hmm.
the weather?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll say, what's the weather in Fort Lauderdale, or I have friends in Orlando, or, you know, it's kind of cool to see what it is right now, and so, yeah, we use it some. Would I have been able to live without it? Sure. It's kind of neat.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I was wondering, whether it's not because, hey, listen, this has happened to me in the past. You know, I hear about something, and I've purchased it, and then I end up not using it very much, you know. And sometimes I look at it, and I say, oh, what? I was an idiot to get that, you know.
Well, the one nice thing, it's so tiny, and it's kind of out of the way, and it lights up a little blue light whenever you talk on it. And then if it comes on, like say that your radio station has made it come on, I will just tell its name and say quit or mm-hmm. stop, and it does that right away. So it's okay. But am I concerned? Not a lot. But not completely at ease either. Well, just wanted to share that.
Appreciate your comments. That's just what I was looking for. Thank you.
All right, Dave. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 283-2525 is the number, 283-2525. Open Talk. Do you have an Alexa or a similar device, and do you really use it? Do you think it's valuable? Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave. Dave, I do not have an Alexa. I just think that it's a fad. I think it was marketed very, very well, and therefore, you know, the techie people think they need to have them. I don't think that there's anything that I can't get off of my cell phone or off of the laptop. I mean, you know, we sign up. We've got family members in various states, so, you know, we've got weather apps that, you know, you can look at a second.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I'm sort of a dinosaur when it comes to the tech age, because I keep thinking of people like John Glenn became a very successful person without all of this technology. Somehow Jimmy Carter made it to the White House, and he, you know, he a very intelligent and also a very sincere and honest man, also without tons of technology. I think that there's certainly a very great place for technology. We see it in the medical industry, but as far as these gadgets go, I think there are too many of them, and quite frankly, I think that I would be, even with the cell phone and the computer, I am concerned about privacy.
Well, you go online and order something.
Yes. Yes, if you go online and order something, you know, then the next thing you know, you're getting all of their promos. And I also got one that, you know, I signed on and I don't know which one to call it, but a message came back, and it actually said my name and my town, you know, the city that I live in. Hmm. And I think, my goodness, who else knows where I am?
Well, there's, is it Mark Zuckerberg who has put a piece of tape over the camera lens on his laptop because he's afraid of it activating and, you know, taking pictures?
I think you're right.
I think it's Zuckerberg who said he's done that. But, uh-huh. You know, I'm with you. My cell phone is a very handy device that I use a lot. Of course, I make calls with it, but it's actually a small computer in your hand. And if I need to look something up in a hurry, it takes a couple of seconds. I don't know whether I'd want to get up and walk into the kitchen, as our earlier caller said, to ask it a question. I don't know. That's my question. Is it a gadget, or is it really something that, you know, you use a lot? So
I'm voting for gadget.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
Sure.
Bye-bye. 283-2525 is the number. Open talk. Hi there, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hello, Dave.
Hi. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Yourself?
Pretty good.
That's good. Well, I have an Alexa, and it was purchased for me a couple years ago as a Christmas gift. I do use it daily. I'm a little bit more unique than some of your callers. I am totally blind, so it's great for me.
Oh, absolutely. I can see that, because you would be unable to use a smartphone or a computer to look something up, right? Yeah.
Well, no, actually, I'm a veteran, so fortunately the VA system has great blind rehab centers. I have adaptive computer. I'm on my iPhone right now.
So it has voice recognition?
The iPhone, the nice thing with Apple products is the adaptability is built into the product.
Mm-hmm.
So all it has to be done is turn it on, and then it's all, well, I use it similar to everybody else with clicks and all that stuff, but a lot more different taps with numerous with fingers, like 2, 3, 4 fingers. But it takes a while to learn, but it's doable.
Well, it's developing. I mean, when these things first came on the market, and you must have one of the earliest models if you've had it for a couple of years. But
right.
They were marketed in TV ads as being able to do things, you know, like turn on the lights in your house, turn on the lights in a certain room, lock the doors, unlock the doors, you know, that sort of thing. And obviously, in a very short period of time, they've now developed to where they can, you know, look stuff up and give you the weather and play music and all that sort of thing. But that's what I'm looking for, feedback on whether or not they're really, you know, really useful. And you say you use yours every day.
Every day I use it. That's great. I listen to you every day, Monday through Friday. I have you on there. If there's a radio station, other radio station or other music, I can get it on there. I can play games with her that are suited for me, trivia games and things like that. So, yes, I guess you could say a gadget for the everyday person, but for somebody that's handy, even somebody that's paralyzed, it'd be a great product for them to help them turn on appliances and lights. I don't need lights, but...
Now, is it wireless? Can you take it from room to room, or do you have to be in the room where it's plugged in?
No, it does have to be plugged in. I have mine down in our family room. That's where I spend a lot of time. But it's easy to unplug. I've unplugged it and taken it to other rooms with me. But I kind of leave it there now. I use my smartphone to listen to your program in the afternoon while I'm doing things at home here. So, but it's for handicapped people. I think it's a great device. It makes their life a lot easier.
And who knows what it will be doing a couple of years from now, huh?
Actually, that's the truth. They change every day, right?
That's for sure. Yeah. Thanks, my friend. I appreciate the call.
Thank you. You have a great day.
You too. Good to talk with you. So there's an individual visually handicapped, visually impaired, who finds it extremely useful. What about you? Did you purchase one of these devices? And there are others, too. You know, Amazon is really kind of the leader at this point, but Google has some sort of a device. I don't know what the name of Google's device is. And you can believe that others are working on it, that's for sure. I wonder how they came up with the name Alexa. Alexa. I was talking with somebody here because I was running this question by some people here at the radio station over the past day or so. And one individual who has one of these units at their home said that sometimes it activates with a similar word, like, for example, electric. You know, if someone happens to mention electric in a conversation, it's close enough, you know, sounding that that will activate Alexa. Alexa, electric. Oh, I can see that. Yeah, I can see that. And then if it's activated, I don't know. I would be really worried, and again, I don't have one. I would be really worried about this thing kicking on and starting to record conversations that I was having with people in my house. And then, as is the case that happened when it was reported last month, not only recording the conversation, but then, for some reason, sending it to the husband's boss. There was no indication as to what they were talking about on the wire story. What if they'd been talking about the boss? You know, and what a jerk he is or something like that. Guy could be fired. Now, the Amazon folks say they're aware of this. They admit that it happened. No question about it. It's not some urban myth that they say they're working on, you know, getting it fixed. I don't know. Hey, we'll take a break. Open Talk 283-2525 is our number, 283-2525. Back with more of It's Your Turn here on WISR in just a couple of minutes.
Whether you're a competitive athlete or a weekend warrior, any injury that keeps you on the sidelines should be treated by a sports medicine expert. Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers offers sports medicine specialists right here in Butler to get you back to enjoying the activities you love. Doctors Rob Waltrip, Josh Szabo, and John Richmond have trained with some of the biggest names in orthopedic sports medicine and use their expertise to treat you. Tri-Rivers accepts most major insurance plans, including both Highmark and UPMC. Learn more at TriRiversMSK.com. Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers, partnering with the Butler community for more than 20 years.
It's never been more important to stay in touch with the events and issues that shape our world. And for more than 25 years, Radio Pennsylvania has been the Commonwealth source for stories and newsmakers impacting your life.
We're taking precautions to prepare for the worst that this storm can deliver.
And I believe that we need an armed, highly trained security officer in every school.
We should not be using mental illness as a scapegoat for things like mass shootings and violence.
Covering your state capital and all corners of the Commonwealth, Radio PA's team of award-winning journalists is on constant watch as your eyes and ears on the front lines of the major events of our time. Honored for broadcasting and journalistic excellence by
the Associated Press, the Pennsylvania Association of Broadcasters, the National Association of State Radio Networks, the National Headliner Awards, and many others.
Eight-time winner of the Joe Snyder Award for Outstanding News Service, the top news honor bestowed by the Associated Press in Pennsylvania. The Radio Pennsylvania Network, bringing you closer to Harrisburg and all of your Keystone State.
Welcome back. It's the Monday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR Open Talk right now. 283-2525, 283-2525. I've been trying to look up and see what the name is for Google's new artificial intelligence assistant. I guess it's just called Google. I don't know. I haven't talked with anybody that had one of those. So how do you activate it? Say Google? I don't know. The names that they pick up for these, and obviously we're still in the early stages of this artificial intelligence stuff, but if you have an Apple phone, an iPhone, then you've got Siri, right? Siri, S-I-R-I, that you can ask for help. Microsoft, that's what the vast majority of people have for their operating system, for their laptop or their PC, right? Microsoft. They've got Cortana in the new Windows 10 system. Cortana is your personal assistant. I have Windows 10 in all of my devices. I've never used Cortana. If I'm looking up something, I can type it in and find it myself. Maybe I should start using it. Hmm? Are they all female names? Is that the... Right? What about those GPS devices for your car? Which I think actually are kind of dying out because, you know, you can use your smartphone now to find your way if you get lost somewhere. But they were all female voices too, huh? Be nice to have a guy once in a while, you know. Somebody come up with one of these artificial intelligence devices and it would be like, you know, Fred. Hey, Fred. Could be discrimination against males. You know? I'd like to see the next one called Fred. Hey, Fred. Just kidding, of course. Hey, as I mentioned to one of the earlier callers, who knows what these things are going to be able to do in another year or two? Obviously, it's a tremendously expanding area of research, artificial intelligence. And, you know, for some folks, probably generational, it's a little scary what some of these things can do. Huh? What do you think? 283-2525, our number, Open Talk. Hi, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hey, Dave.
Hi.
Hey, you know those Fitbit things you wear on your wrist to keep track of your steps and how many calories you're burning? And
yeah, I don't have one, but I know of what you speak, yeah.
Okay, I was reading a magazine, I'm not sure what magazine, a couple months ago, but here, soldiers that were deployed overseas in bases, like in the middle of nowhere, you know, to take a run, they would have to, like, run in the base. Of course, you know, you don't want to run out in the middle of Afghanistan or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody figured out that they're actually, if somebody was watching that base, they could tell where everybody was at due to their Fitbit, where they were taking a run, where they were going to the mess hall. Pretty much, I think they had to tell soldiers not to wear their Fitbits, because they would potentially tip off the enemy where they were at.
Wow.
What everybody was doing. And who would think of that?
Well, you wonder about that with your cell phone, your smartphone, too, because they can triangulate your position by checking records in the various cell phone towers that were utilized.
And that's even if you have your location off.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
so. And that's used by law enforcement. It's also been used, I understand, in some criminal trials, to gather evidence. I guess I wouldn't worry too much about that myself, but
right.
Who knows? You might be in a might be in a place where you don't want necessarily somebody to know where you are.
That's true.
Or it's just nosiness too, you know?
Well, here's the other thing. This is a little bit off the subject, but everybody now has a rewards card, the drugstore, the grocery market.
Mm-hmm.
So I always think, what if you, needed some kind of, medical treatment later in life, and they said, look at this, you ate, meat every day for the last 5 years, whatever.
Well, that's true.
You ate this much sugar, or, you bought this much beer, whatever,
Never thought about that. All of those reward cards keep track of every single thing you buy.
Yeah, and how long do they keep that information? And
And who do they sell it to?
Well, here's a funny thing. One drugstore I go to has one, and every now and then you'll get a receipt, and there'll be coupons on there. And usually it's stuff that you tend to buy.
Mm-hmm.
They know that it's you, So it's okay, here's cashews or, whatever. So obviously they're storing that and keeping track of it. So.
And it's instantaneous. I know with the supermarket rewards card that I have, if I buy, for example, and this just happened to me last week, I bought some fruit cups, okay? You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Those little individual fruit cups that you put in kids' lunches.
Like pudding things or whatever.
Yeah, but this was fruit. And I bought Del Monte, and I was actually looking at one of the other brands, and it said, some of this fruit may come from China. And I thought, well, what do I want to buy fruit from China for? So I bought the Del Monte brand, and I'm not kidding you, when I checked out, I immediately got a coupon for Dole fruit cups, not the ones... ones I'd purchased, but for Dole. Now, I don't know, but I'm thinking that Dole must have, they must pay some sort of a premium.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't do it for free.
Right.
So that as soon as you buy one brand, then you get a coupon for their brand instead,
That's interesting.
Yeah, and it's kind of scary because it happens instantaneously, It's not like it takes 5 or 10 minutes.
Right.
Huh.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, the supermarkets, a lot of times where they place the groceries, they pay extra money just for that spot, for stuff to be eye level instead of lower level be at the end cap. So, it doesn't surprise me. But, hey, there's a lot of information out there. Who knows what they're doing with it?
They're watching us all the time, my friend.
Big brother, 1984. All
thanks.
Right, Dave, take
thanks
care.
A lot. It is kind of scary. I don't mean to... make fun of it. It is, when you think about it, it is kind of scary. You put all this together with all the security cameras that we've got around these days, and we're watching everywhere. You go, the Pennsylvania Turnpike is slowly eliminating all of their manned toll booths, where there's a person in there. Taking your money, they're going to the just drive through. If you have an easy pass, okay, you get a bill at the end of the month. If you don't have an easy pass, takes a picture of your license plate, and they send you a bill that way. Now think about that technology. If you've got cars going through there, obviously they slow down a little bit, but still, the bing, 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 cars going through, bing, bing, and takes a quick picture of the license plate, identifies who it is, generates a bill, and mails it to you. That is pretty amazing. And I guess all that's cheaper than having real people in the toll booth, I suppose. No other reason that they do it, right? Yes, as that earlier caller said, 1984. Big Brother is watching. We'll take a break. We're scheduled to chat with our first guest on the program today, and she is Dr. Megan Groh-Miller, one of the physicians with Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers. And we're going to be talking about concussions today with Dr. Miller. So that's very much in the news, and I'm anxious to chat with her. She'll be joining us here very shortly. And please stay tuned later on the program today. John Righetti from Community Health Clinic and Larry Berg will be joining us. There's going to be a program coming up that may be of interest to you, honoring Larry Berg for his public service work. So that's coming up later on the program today. Okay, we take a quick break, and then we're back to talk with Dr. Miller here on It's Your Turn on WISR. Back right after this short message. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. Welcome back, friends. Well, the first guest now on our It's Your Turn program for this Monday. She joins us by telephone. It's Dr. Megan Groh-Miller, M.D. She is with Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Center. She's a primary care sports medicine physician with Tri-Rivers. Dr. Miller, nice to have you with us today. Nice to talk with you.
Thanks for having me. It's my pleasure.
We want to talk about concussions today, very much in the news, especially over the past few years. I dare say if we went back 10 years or so ago, obviously, you know, people got concussions, but never so much in the news. Probably brought to the forefront by so many stories about people getting concussions while playing sports, right?
That is correct. I think it is probably just as common as it was in the past, but I think it's just more recognized now, and I do think we have athletes playing at a much higher level, more intense sports even at a younger age, particularly females. So I think that's what's bringing it to the forefront more than maybe we remember in the past.
Mm-hmm. And what all started it was professional football. We had individuals who developed problems, severe problems later in life, sometimes premature death, blamed on this. There was a film, I think it was called Concussion, a couple of years ago, about the problem. But it's not just professional athletes anymore, is it? There's concern among younger athletes.
Yeah, we see athletes of all ages sustain concussions, and we are seeing a lot of young athletes. Most of the, when we're talking football players, and, you know, going back to that, that's the Will Smith movie, and Will Smith's one of my favorite actors. He did a great job in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those concerns about the athletes that are the professional football players that are then dying, you know, that's an exception for professional athletes. We're not seeing young kids necessarily having those problems later in life. Most of those issues that are that severe are people that are playing at a high level for, you know, the majority of their life. You know, we don't necessarily worry about that with young people. But we do see young athletes get concussions. Hopefully they don't have any of those long-term implications as long as they're caught and treated. But the problem is you had many years of concussions not being recognized. And if they're not treated and they're not recognized, that's when we're seeing these kind of accumulate and cause problems down the road.
A little bit about Dr. Miller, our listeners. Her BS degree comes from Cornell University, got her a doctorate of medicine from Pitt, University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, completed preliminary internal medicine internship at the University of Connecticut Health Center, and she's had other residencies as well at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York and at Yale New Haven Hospital in Connecticut. How long have you been with the Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers, Dr. Miller?
I'm going on my six-year anniversary. I actually joined them in August of 2012, so it'll be 6 years coming up this summer.
Now, do you have an area of injury that you focus on in particular?
So I do all non-operative sports injuries. I do see a lot of concussions, me and one other doctor in our practice, the main concussion providers. But any sort of injury, and you don't have to necessarily be an athlete. We see people who are, you know, weekend warriors or just any active person in general who gets any injury kind of head to toe, that is going to be dealt with non-operatively, which is actually the majority of injuries, and I'd be the person that you could start with.
Where are your primary clinical sites, Dr. Miller?
So I'm 50-50. I see patients in Slippery Rock, right on Slippery Rock University campus half the time, and then I'm at the Butler or Crossroads campus where 422 and 68 come together the other half of the time.
Mm-hmm. You are, in fact, team physician for at least Slippery Rock University, I know, correct?
I'm the sports team physician for Slippery Rock University, and then I'm also the school and team physician for the whole Slippery Rock school district, including the high school.
Well, let's talk about concussion. First of all, for us lay people, can you describe exactly what a concussion is medically?
Absolutely. So concussion is a traumatic brain injury. We call it a mild brain injury. Mild doesn't mean it doesn't matter, but compared to, you know, bleeding or a stroke, those are considered more major injuries. It's an injury altering the way the brain functions. So structurally, the brain is normal when you get a concussion. If you get pictures of the brain with a CAT scan or an MRI, they look normal because structurally the brain is normal. But functionally, we see the brain is altered. You can get a concussion either by classically getting hit in the head, but sometimes people that get hit hard in their body and then their head shakes back and forth or they get a whiplash-like injury can sustain a concussion. Functionally, things go off with the brain. There's a constellation of symptoms we can see. The most common symptom is probably headache. People can get nausea, dizziness. They can get issues with thinking as far as having problems concentrating or problems remembering. Sleep can be abnormal, either sleeping a lot or having problems sleeping. And we do see some emotional issues where people can get increased depression, anxiety, type of disorders. So that's kind of a summary of what concussions are and how you get them.
Do you have to lose consciousness if you suffer a concussion?
No, it's actually believed to be in 10% or less of patients that lose consciousness. So that's a common fallacy, as though they didn't get knocked out, so they don't have a concussion. It's actually the norm to not lose consciousness. If you do lose consciousness, it can signal that it's a worse injury, but most of the patients I see actually did not lose consciousness associated with their injury.
I'm sure that most of our listeners watching a football game have seen an individual suffer a particularly hard hit, get up, sometimes with help, but get back up on their feet. But they're wobbly. They kind of, stagger around a little bit, almost like they were inebriated. Is that a sign of a possible concussion?
That can absolutely be a sign. We do see balance disturbance after a concussion. It's probably the most immediate thing we see. If you see someone get hit and they're having problems, you know, balancing or need help to get off or they're seeming like they were stunned, it's a very high suspicion of a concussion. And that person really shouldn't be returned to play without someone who has knowledge in concussion evaluating them. That would be very bad sign to me of maybe suffering a concussion, so you shouldn't let that person back on the field unless they're evaluated.
I can remember not all that long ago, certainly when I was a youth watching football, that announcers would use the phrase, "Wow, he certainly got his bell rung," or something to that effect, usually with a bit of a chuckle, like it was almost funny. And that's not all that long ago.
No, it's not that long ago, but I think that's why we're seeing those problems with some of the, we're seeing these athletes, like you had hinted to, that have been in the NFL or even some other sports that have taken a lot of hits to their head, have had a lot of injuries, and they're having really serious, significant problems down the line that we're just recognizing now. There's something called chronic traumatic encephalopathy. High-level athletes who've played for professional level or have had contact sports with multiple hits to the head can have this, and it can actually lead to mood disturbances, early dementia. Those are the patients, you know, that we read in the news that, you know, committed suicide at a young age, or that's what we're trying to prevent. And, you know, we just recognize this, and I think that this injury was ignored, or as you said, almost joked at for years, and we're seeing the long-term sequelae of this, and we're trying to avoid this and curtail it, and we certainly want to protect our youngest and our most vulnerable athletes from ever reaching that point. So I don't think it's a joke anymore. I think we're seeing the pendulum swing the other way, but I think it's very important.
I've seen wire stories and a couple of video reports on TV about younger athletes getting a so-called baseline test so that physicians would have something to compare with if they suspected a concussion. Can you talk about that a little bit? Is that a fairly common procedure now, or is that still kind of in the experimental stage?
It's actually fairly common, particularly in our area in western Pennsylvania. It's almost uniform. What a baseline test is it tests them preseason, so before they suffer any injury. And then if they do get an injury, then you can take those scores and compare and look for differences. With concussion, a lot of the diagnosis, you know, since I said that CAT scan, MRIs, those are normal, we need something else that can help us with the diagnosis. So if we do some testing in the preseason and those baseline testing looks at memory, it looks at reaction time, it looks at processing speed, and if we then test them preseason and then we have an injury and we test them again and we see significant differences into where their memory lied in early season or where their reaction time lied and where it is now after injury, it helps us diagnose since we don't necessarily have a scan that can diagnose concussion. In western Pennsylvania, impact testing is the most common because that was actually developed by UPMC. It's a computer-based test that does test their verbal memory, their visual memory, reaction time, and overall processing speed. And all the schools give it to most athletes, certainly all contact-based athletes preseason, and then when they get injured, we can do that again. There are other baseline tests around other certain paper, pencil, or other computer-based branded systems, but in our area, I would say impact is the most common.
And does this, I'm not familiar with the test at all, does it take very long?
It takes about maybe 20, at max 30 minutes. It's a computerized test is the impact, and most of the other baseline testing is similar amount of time. So it's pretty quick, they do them all preseason, and then when someone gets an injury, we do it again. Some schools will do the testing post-injury themselves. Sometimes they come to our office or other offices that offer it to that testing, but it's a pretty quick test.
So there's no scanning or anything involved. It's just working at a computer keyboard?
Correct, yes. We usually don't do scans in the setting of a concussion unless we're worried about a more significant injury structurally. Like we said, we use the impact to help us diagnose and then to help us see when their scores go back to normal and they're ready to return to play. We use that to show recovery also.
Do schools who are utilizing this use it mainly just for student athletes in high-contact sports, or is it more widespread in other sports as well?
Each school has a different protocol. At Slippery Rock, we pretty much test all athletes. I've seen even atypical athletes get concussions. You know, everyone thinks of football or soccer. We've occasionally had the track athlete that falls and hits their head. So, you know, certain schools use a very broad and test everybody, and that's the way we like to do it at Slippery Rock, just to keep everybody safe. Some other schools do just focus it down to contact sports, so it's school specific. Almost all places do it at least for contact, and some schools extend it across all athletes, which I think is the better, safer bet.
We're talking, listeners, in case you're joining us a little bit late on this segment of It's Your Turn, we're talking with Dr. Megan Groh-Miller, MD. She is a primary care sports medicine physician with Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers, and the main subject of our conversation today is concussion and concussion care. Now, let's talk a little bit about care. What do you do for a patient whom you suspect has suffered a concussion?
So the most important thing to do is take the athlete out of sports, take them out of any way of harm. The worst thing that could happen for these patients is that if they have a suspected concussion is that they go and get another hit to their head. So they should be taken out of play, particularly anything that causes them risk of being hit again in the head or trauma to their brain, because that really can make their injury significantly worse and take longer to get better. So that's step one. Then most of the time after that, recovery for the first couple weeks is mostly just, you know, relative rest. So we don't mean we're locking them up in a dark room somewhere and not letting them do anything, but, you know, just light activity like walks. We don't try not to let them do a super exertive activity. We usually let them go to school, but maybe modify school and kind of give them some extra time for tests or assignments. At home, you want to have them limiting electronics, trying to just kind of relatively rest that brain. Most people we see get better with just keeping their brain safe and letting them rest for a few weeks. Every so often, about 10 to 20% of people will have symptoms that last more than a few weeks. For those patients, there are some medications and physical therapy that we can use, but that's usually the minority of patients, and that would be for people that have prolonged symptoms. When they're better, when their symptoms are gone, if they've had computerized impact testing or another form of post-concussion testing, once they're feeling better and that testing is normal, then we let them get back to play kind of gradually, just making sure that symptoms don't come back and making sure that they're safe to go back.
You mentioned earlier in our conversation, Doctor, about females being involved here as well. I'm thinking of soccer in particular. Young women are playing soccer. There's been an explosive growth in recent years, perhaps fueled by the success of the U.S. national team in the Olympics and in the World Cup. But there are many who are concerned about, of course, in soccer, you're not allowed to touch the ball with your hands. One of the great moves in soccer is heading. You try to hit the ball with your head. Some people have suggested that helmets should be used by soccer players, but then I've seen other reports saying that that wouldn't make that much of a difference whether you have a helmet on or not. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So, first of all, heading by itself has not necessarily been shown to cause concussion. I think that young soccer players shouldn't be heading. You have to wait till they get the appropriate neck strength, and you have to wait till they have the appropriate ability. So you shouldn't have, when they're young and they're new to the sport, they shouldn't be heading, because that can be done in an unsafe manner and I think cause injury. But an older, experienced soccer athlete, we don't necessarily see heading tied with concussion. Normally we see more concussions by collisions with another player, collisions with the goalpost, falling to the ground, more than heading. When we talk about protective equipment, there's a lot of people trying to research this, and I think it's coming from a good place to see if we can prevent concussions. Unfortunately, most helmets, headbands that are marketed out there as concussion prevention haven't really been proven to work. The reason is concussion is not just about getting hit in the head. There's a lot of other elements that can cause it. So if you are braced, you can take and ready for a hit, you can take a much higher impact than you can if you're kind of not looking and hit from the side. So there's the element of surprise. There's rotational forces. Those things can't just be protected by a helmet. So we don't necessarily advocate any of those helmets or headbands to prevent concussion. What we do advocate is making sure that if you are in soccer and you're heading, that you have the experience and the age and the neck strength to be able to do that, and that if someone does get an injury, you recognize it right away and remove them from harm. Right now, we don't have anything else equipment-wise to prevent the injury.
You mentioned earlier, Dr. Miller, that a person does not have to lose consciousness to have suffered a concussion. Are there any other common misconceptions or myths about concussions?
So I think that's the most common for me. The second most common that drives me a little bit nuts is thinking you have to send the person home and waking them up every hour. You really need to let people that have had a head injury or suspected concussion rest. I always tell people, no one feels good when they're woken up every hour. I mean, any of us who have had newborns or young children, you feel quite foggy if you're woken up multiple times a night and you're taking this person whose brain is already foggy and you're not letting them sleep. So don't go and wake the person up every hour. What I tell people is when they're awake, talk to them, make sure you're not seeing any worsening, they're not getting confused, they're not slurring their speech, but when they're asleep, let them sleep and just kind of check them when they're awake. More sleep is generally the better. So that's probably the biggest thing that I see, that even sometimes they're still counseled by the ER to do that. So don't wake them up, let them sleep, just check them when they're awake. And the other thing is sometimes people look for a magic number. Oh, well, I was told I have to be out for a week and then I can go back. I don't think anyone, if they're diagnosed with concussion, should be going back without being appropriately cleared. Like I said, making sure they have no symptoms and their testing is back to normal. And that may be a week for somebody. It may be 3 weeks for somebody else. It can, unfortunately, be 3 months for some, you know, another person. So there's no set time limit of I can go back after this. So avoiding that, everybody gets 1 week or 10 days or whatever the number is. Those are probably the two most common things that I think are can be damaging if that information is accepted as opposed to not followed.
I've heard it said that younger individuals tend to heal faster from an injury, whether it's a fracture or a sprain or whatever, than older folks. Does that hold true with concussions, or is it in fact just the opposite?
Yeah, not so much, actually. So I agree. Young people are amazing with how they heal, and if they get a fractured bone, they heal quicker than us older folks do. But with concussion, the younger athletes actually can take longer. So the athletes I see take the longest tend to be my elementary and junior high age. As they get to high school and college, they actually get better faster than those younger patients. Now, we do see an exception as we see older individuals, it starts to be long again, but the younger there is not necessarily the better when we're talking about elementary or kind of middle, junior, high school age. They tend to take a little longer.
Is it, I suppose it's quite logical to assume that many people have suffered a concussion at some point in their lives and perhaps never even realized it, huh?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, looking back, I know there's one I actually suffered and I didn't, you know, realize it at the time. I can give a little story. I had fainted, smacked my head against some concrete, and kind of woke up and didn't think anything of it. I'm a fairly active person. I was a college athlete, so I kept doing all my activity. And I had headaches for probably several months after that. And I thought, oh, yeah, I hit my head and I have a headache. I didn't realize what it was. I probably had a concussion, and I never got checked out, and I wasn't necessarily an athlete at the time. But I think all of us may have, or a good proportion of us may have been through something similar.
Yeah, I was hit in the head a couple of times in accidents with the, you know, when I was a kid. And one time when I was in high school, I was near the pole vaulting pit. And, you know, when a pole vaulter takes off, you know, and they hoist themselves up into the air, then they let go of the pole. And one guy let go of a pole and came down and hit me on the head. I didn't even see it. And I was certainly groggy, you know, for a while, kind of, you know, shook my head a little bit. And I suppose I may have had a concussion there and never even realized it either.
Right. And then, you know, if you think about it, I know looking back to myself, like I said, I had headaches for a few months. And maybe if I'd realized, it would have been something that would have not affected me for so long. But, yeah, you don't realize. I think it's now it's a little more recognized than it was before, for sure.
I think of one sport in particular, and I've wondered about this for some time, boxing, the sport of boxing. Now, there are proponents of that, I know, but my gosh, you know, if you take it down to simplest terms, it would seem that the main point of boxing is to try to give the other person a concussion because you're trying to hit him in the head, right?
Right. There is actually something called dementia pugilistica, which is a term for, it literally means kind of punch drunk, but it's actually a early dementia you get from having kind of repetitive hits to your brain, and it's actually what I believe what Muhammad Ali, not being his doctor, but what I'm looking at from the outside, would have suffered from.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of a different form of, it's a dementia brought out by that repetitive trauma, and then pugilistica, I think, means in another language, you know, being hit. Punched repeatedly, so absolutely.
Yeah, from what I, and I'm no boxing expert, but from what I understand, for judges, that, you know, if you're able to hit somebody in the head, that counts more than a body punch. And it just, I mean, with all of this, you know, awareness that we now have of the danger of traumatic brain injury, it It just seems almost ridiculous that this is still considered to be a sport to me. It just kind of blows your mind.
Well, I would agree. There's actually a little bit of a dichotomy in sports medicine. There's about half of us that don't agree with it being a sport and don't believe we should kind of support that. And then there's the other half who see the inherent injuries that come and feel like you still need physicians to take care of them. So whether or not you cover boxing or whether it's mixed martial arts or ultimate fighting, I personally don't like to cover events like that because I think it condones it in a way. But some of my colleagues say, well, if we don't cover it, who is going to take care of them and make sure they're taken care of? So I'm with you. Like I said, there's a little bit of dichotomy. I think those sports that are made to directly harm people, I don't necessarily agree with. It's one thing to have an injury come about from a sport that's designed for something else, but I agree with you. Those kind of are just intentionally meant to harm others. I don't necessarily support them either.
The other thing that I think about, I'm a baby boomer, Dr. Miller, and I can remember when I was a kid watching Westerns on TV, and there were a bunch of them. How many times did you see somebody hit somebody over the head with the handle of a pistol? Now, what they were trying to do, I assume, this is a long time ago, and I'm thinking back to the Lone Ranger or Roy Rogers or something like that, but the good guys, instead of shooting somebody, they hit him over the head you see this in film noir, old crime movies as well. It's happening all the time, and nobody realized you're giving a person a concussion, right, when you knock them out by hitting them over the head with the handle of a gun?
Pretty much, yes. I'm a little younger than you, so I didn't watch all those Westerns, but that I would agree.
Yeah, strange things, yeah. And that was considered, the good guys did that back then. not the bad guys. What should, and I'm thinking mainly of parents now, of young athletes, what should they do if they suspect that their son or daughter has been injured, with a traumatic brain injury? What would be the protocol?
Well, the first thing to do, like I suggested earlier, is make sure you don't let them go back on that field, okay? Make sure you hold them out of sports, particularly something that's going to put them at a risk of head trauma, and then have them evaluated by someone who understands and knows concussions, whether that's someone like me or if they have a primary care doctor who's versed in it, but they should have somebody who has a knowledge on evaluating them, check them out, and clear them before they let them go back to play. But as a parent, the best thing you could do is just take your child out of harm's way, and even if you're watching from the sidelines and you recognize it and the coach doesn't, if you think there's something wrong with your kid, there's no shame in pulling them out. Even if you realize that they're fine, at least you kept them safe. And that's, as you're the parent, that's your job. And then if bring them home, just let them rest and just get them evaluated and seen as fast as you can. The other thing I would suggest as a parent is if you're kid is involved in a sport and either their school doesn't offer baseline testing or they're in a sport outside of school, if you can get them baseline testing, it does help if they do have an injury, treat them.
And what about, as a final question for you, what about someone who's had, or your son or daughter has had, two or three or four of these incidents? Is that a red flag?
It is a red flag. I mean, it's hard to give a certain number that's acceptable to have. I use a number of three. If you've had three, we have to start thinking. Now, it depends how, if you've had three in a year, it means a lot different than if you had one when you were 10 and one when you were 16 and one when you were 20. But multiple concussions over a short time frame are concerning. And it also depends how long it took you to recover. If you got better pretty quick each time, that's one thing. But if you're seeing that it took you 2 weeks the first time, 2 months the second time, and then 6 months the third time, that's concerning too if they're getting more severe or if you're having prolonged recovery. And I think you just need to ask your physician or who's ever taking care of you. Sometimes it becomes not worth it. We all love our sports, but if that sport is starting to cause us more harm than the benefit of our getting it, there's lots of ways you can modify. It doesn't mean you can't be active. It's just sometimes it's not what you need to continue if it's becoming more harmful to you. You don't want to have long-term effects like some of these professional athletes we're seeing.
Can you give us a little bit of background about your practice, Dr. Miller? I know that Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers has, you're one of many, many physicians, right?
Yeah, we have 23 physicians. We have 21 physician assistants and nurse practitioners. So we have a full staff. I do primary care sports medicine. I'm dual board certified in internal medicine and sports medicine. I see non-operative sports injuries from head to toe. I treat concussions. I also do osteoporosis management for our group for patients that have had fractures and are trying to make their bones more healthy or to prevent fractures and patients that are at risk with thin bones. I see patients in Butler and Slippery Rock. Tri-Rivers participates in both Highmark and UPMC, so we can see pretty much everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can't take care of you, I can assure you we have someone in my group who can.
Nice to talk with you today, Doctor. Very informative. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. You have a great day.
And you too. Thanks. Dr. Megan Groh-Miller, MD, primary care sports medicine physician with Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers. More to come on It's Your Turn. We'll take a break, and we'll welcome our next guest into the studio here in just a minute or so. We'll be back with more of the Monday edition of It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words.
Olivia from Washington. Laid off and trying to keep our little kids from realizing that mommy and daddy haven't eaten in a while.
Roger from California. I'm grateful we could afford our son's surgery. I'm nervous that now we can't really afford food.
Daniel from California. Choosing whether to pay the rent or pay to fix the car to get to work doesn't leave us with much at all. Now we can't even pay for meals.
Donna from Louisiana. The storm just hit, and we went from donating to the food bank to needing it.
Keisha from South Carolina. I've been skipping meals so my two kids can eat, but filling up on water doesn't really work.
Hunger is a story we can end. End it at feedingamerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Butler Ambulance Service not only serves the largest portion of Butler County for 911 ambulance response, but they also offer CPR and first aid training classes and are a leader in wheelchair van assistance too. Butler Assist Coach, a division of Butler Ambulance, provides county residents with medical and non-medical wheelchair van transportation for general doctor visits, shopping, or even transportation to an event. To learn more, visit butlerambulance.com or to schedule a transport, call 724-283-4385. Butler Ambulance Service. Care you can count on.
It's a great night for a ball game. Join the Butler Blue Sox at Kelly Automotive Park when they take on the Chillicothe Paints. First pitch at 7:05. Tickets are available at the gate or online at butlerbluesox.net.
Friends, nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program today. And nice to welcome our next guest. They're with us here in the studio. John Righetti is here representing the Community Health Clinic of Butler County. John, good to see you.
Nice to be here.
And Larry Berg is here, too. Larry Berg, good to see you, my friend. I haven't seen you in a while.
Well, Dave, I feel so at home again after all these years.
Yes. Well, nice to have you here today.
Well, good to see you, Dave. You've done well, I hear.
Yes. It's been fun. Been 15 years or so, I think.
Actually,
hard to believe. Huh?
Actually, try 17.
Really? Well, tempus fugit, as my old Latin teacher used to say. Time flies. John, there's an event coming up that we want the community to know about, and it involves Mr. Larry Berg. Tell us about it.
It sure is. It's the Community Cornerstone Award Dinner. The Community Cornerstone Award is a relatively new award. The clinic has just begun this just a few years ago. In fact, Larry is only the third person to receive this award. But that's the good news, is that our honoree this year is Larry Berg, who's with us today. And for you to be able to receive this award, you have to be someone who has contributed significantly to the well-being of Butler County. And we don't give the award just from a healthcare perspective. It's someone who has contributed as much as possible in many aspects of making Butler County a better place to live. And Larry, we selected Larry. I know I won't embarrass him with me sitting here. But we selected Larry because over five decades. There's so much this man has done for this community, and he can bespeak obviously his career. I'm going to brag a little bit about what he's done from a nonprofit perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And when we first sat down to say who should we award this to this year, I said, name the nonprofit Larry Berg has not helped in some way, shape, or form, otherwise by raising money, helping to establish it as an entity, emceeing its programming, and I was hard-pressed to come up with one. And that made it pretty clear to all of us that who was really deserving of this award was Larry.
Mm-hmm. And this award is named in honor of Jean Purvis.
That's correct. So she was the first recipient, and then after that, the award was named the Jean B. Purvis Community Cornerstone Award. So after her, the next awardee was John, physician John Reefer, and all that he has done for this community. And so this year is Larry Berg.
Larry, I'm sure the fact that this award is named after Jean Purvis means a lot to you.
It does, because she was one of the first people who let me in a sense. When we first came to this community in 1964, we didn't know anybody. We bought the radio station and didn't know anybody, and certainly had to get to know people because we felt like outsiders, which we were. And Jean Purvis was one of the very first people that asked me to help with a project, and I thought, why is she doing this? Here's a newcomer. There are lots of newcomers that arrive in Butler regularly. And it was just a very generous gesture, so it meant so much, and that's why this award means so much, coming from Jean Purvis.
It would be hard for you, off the top of your head, probably, to talk about the many boards that you have served on over the years. You need to get an abacus and a pen and paper, I think, right?
I can tell you about the first one. You remember John Ciprian? John Ciprian was the owner of Miller Shoe Store, and his children and grandchildren still run the store. And John Ciprian, when we called on him to buy advertising for the radio station, became very friendly because he's a wonderful guy. Was a wonderful guy. And one day he said, "Would you be interested in joining the Rotary Club?" And in those days, and maybe still now, the Rotary Club was made up of all the big hitters in town, all the big leaders in town, the people who have contributed so much and who ran the largest businesses in town. And I thought, my gosh, this is a wonderful entree to get to know the community. And then he asked me to be a member of the board of the Easter Seal Society, which was the predecessor to Life Steps, because he was an important man in that organization as well. And so that got me started, and realizing that John Ciprian was the chairman at that time of the Community Development Corporation, which was an all-nonprofit and all-non-paying organization, all volunteers. And they brought ServiStar, American Hardware, to this community. They brought Bobby Brooks, which was a big clothing manufacturer, to this community. And they brought International Staple to this community and many others. And I started realizing in the first months and first year of being here in Butler that there must be something special about this community, because all of these people are volunteering their time, spending a lot of time to make it a better community. And I thought, wow, they're letting me in.
Yeah. And you have treated this throughout your career as part of your obligation to the community, giving back.
I feel that, Absolutely, Dave, they're helping me in so many ways to feel comfortable, if nothing else, to feel like welcome to the community. The least I can do is to mimic some of the things all these people that are in these organizations are doing, and maybe I can contribute something and learn something about the community.
Tell us, John Rigetti, a little bit about the Community Award Dinner. Later this week, am I correct?
It is. It's this upcoming Friday at the Butler Country Club. Starts at 6 p.m., and it is always the folks at the Butler Country Club do a great job. Chef Wagner does wonderful food for the event. Anybody who wishes to attend is welcome to attend, though I think they better get their tickets quick because there aren't too many of them left at this stage of the game. They're $125 a piece. But it gives you people an opportunity to do two things. One, to come out and honor Larry, because as you hear, it's been 17 years since retirement. So it's about time to bring him back out and remind people everything he has done for this community.
Well, retirement from here. I've been doing a few things.
I was going to say, yeah. So he's not. He doesn't have his radio prominence that he once had. But he's, you know, but we can honor this man for the wonderful work he's done. The other thing, too, is that it's obviously a fundraiser for the clinic. And it makes significant, last year it made significant dollars. It will, we think, again this year make significant dollars for the clinic. The clinic only holds three special events in a year's time to raise its budget. But the clinic is different from most of the nonprofits in that it must raise its entire budget. It's not a federally funded clinic. Again, just like you heard Larry talk about these people in Butler who thought, how can I make this a better community? Whenever this clinic, under the driving force of Gene Purvis, was developed 10 years ago, the issue was, how can we, the people of Butler, solve the situation of care for uninsured people? And that's exactly what's happened, and it's exactly what we've done for 10 years now. But it has to raise its entire budget, which is roughly about $475,000 a year. And so we look at multiple ways to do that, and this event is just one of those ways. But what it allows us to do is that we can give care to people who have no health insurance. And it's always important to remind people who those people are, because we don't really think too much about them. The people we see are ages 19 to 64. Under 19, you're eligible for the CHIPS program mm-hmm. at the state level. So if you're for children's insurance, over 64, you're eligible for Medicare. So there is insurance available to you. The folks that we're seeing have health insurance available through the marketplace. But that doesn't necessarily mean, A, they can afford it, given what their daily expenses are, or B, that they can find an insurance that most physicians will accept. So we're there. We're kind of like that catch basin for those people. So most people would be surprised to find that a very large portion of our clientele are people in their 40s and 50s. There are people who, starting in 2008, lost very good-paying jobs and have never been able to find a job of equal pay standard, and that people who continue to lose jobs. So these are folks who are working one or two or three service industry jobs where the employer doesn't either offer insurance or they can't afford the insurance. Mm-hmm. And they're doing that just to kind of pay their bills, to piece their life together. And then there are people that lose their health insurance really literally overnight. Like, we have clients, for instance, some of them women who are housewives whose husbands were working for a company and now they have health insurance, but the husband dies of heart attack or dies of cancer. And at that moment, she loses her health insurance. And she may not have the financial resources to get it, or better, worse than that, she may have pre-existing conditions that preclude her access to insurance. So it's for all of these people, the people who can't get the insurance, the people that have insurances that most physicians may not accept, the people who wake up surprised, one day I don't have health insurance. It's the reason we exist. And we don't exist to be kind of like we're your caregiver for the next 20 years. What we do is work with these people to try and find an insurance package that fits their needs and to get them care from other community organizations. So, for instance, if someone has a behavioral health issue like chronic depression, we'll get them in, we get them diagnosed, we get them their initial meds, and then we work with the various behavioral health organizations in town to say, where do you belong, who is most effective at treating your particular issue.
We're talking with guests John Rigetti and Larry Berg on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. More time with them in just a moment. We'll take a quick break here for a message from the folks at Goan Postal Butler, one of our sponsors on the program today. Hey, folks, have you tried these guys yet? They're pretty amazing. I have. It's very, very convenient. What do? They package your items for shipping. Goan Postal Butler is your friendly neighborhood shipping center. They're located just off Newcastle Road, right behind King's and Villa Grande Restaurant and the Shockey Mini Storage Facility. And yes, They package your items for shipping. How convenient is this? You don't have to worry about finding the right size box. Is it too big or too little? Finding the bubble wrap and the special labels and that special tape. Forget it. Just take your items up to Gone Postal Butler. They'll package them up and ship them out. And you can ship them any way you want. U.S. Postal Service, UPS, FedEx, your choice. Pretty convenient, hmm? By the way, they also offer copying service and scanning and faxing. You can even rent a temporary mailbox there. They're open Monday through Friday. Gone Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. Phone them for more information, 724-841-0044. Gone Postal Butler. I think the midday lottery numbers are available from Harrisburg. They are. Patrick Parker will give them to you. We'll be back in just a moment.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick two is 66-66. Pick three, 237-237. The pick four, 8527. The pick five, 00783. Wild ball for each of those is four. Your treasure hunt is 1, 8, 15, 16, and 29. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $25,000.
Have the thoughts of becoming a caregiver for your parents been on your mind a lot lately? Maybe you're thinking about your own life in a few years. Pretty overwhelming, and you don't know where to turn. Let me suggest attorney Michael Pater. He handles each account like they were his own mom and dad. For elder law issues, wills, power of attorney, living wills, trusts, and more, call attorney Michael Pater at the Handicap Accessible Morgan Center, downtown Butler, at 287-7724. Representing individuals, families, and businesses for over 26 years is attorney Michael Pater, 287-7724.
When your pet dies, your whole world is turned upside down. You grieve because your pet was a part of you, a part of your family. So when the time comes, that precious member of your family deserves the most respectful attention. If you choose pet cremation, which many pet lovers do, please consider the sensitive local services provided by Butler Pet Cremation and Glenn Thompson Miller. Here's our pledge to you. Your pet will be cremated individually in our impeccable facility right here in Butler. We assure you that the cremains are assuredly your pets and your pets alone. Before you make your decision, ask how others do it. Individual cremation? Perhaps not. Bring your pet to us or we'll come to your home. And when the time comes, tell your veterinarian that you prefer Butler Pet Cremation and Glenn Thompson Miller. He's a pet parent too. Call us at 724-287-3706. 287-3706. Butler Pet Cremation and Glenn Thompson Miller. Thank you.
Welcome back, good friends. Great to have you with us on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR. Our guests on this segment of the program today, John Righetti and Larry Berg. Larry is going to be honored with a presentation of the Gene B. Purvis Cornerstone Community Award at a dinner this coming Friday. It's Friday, right? The 15th. I'm trying to remember, Larry, and you may remember this. Gene Purvis first came across the idea of a community health clinic. I think she was down south somewhere, in the Carolinas, am I right on that? And she ran across this, and suddenly a light bulb went off in her head. And
she was in Hilton Head, South Carolina. And she saw that there was a free clinic there and learned more about it talking to some of the doctors. And one of the doctors in particular realized that the employees at this whole Hilton Head Resort operation were not insured. They had no medical insurance. And he rallied many of the other doctors who were wintering down there and decided to form this community health clinic. And they operated it for some time. And that became a model for similar operations around the country. And Jean was down there at the time. Mm-hmm. And she said, Butler needs something like that because of all the people falling through the cracks and all the misinformation about health care in this country. And so she brought the idea back to Butler and sold a lot of people on the idea and raised some money to get this thing started, found out that there were doctors willing to volunteer, pharmacists willing to volunteer, nurses willing to volunteer. And 10 years ago it started, and it's been doing a wonderful job ever since. And that's why I'm interested in helping them any way they can.
There are some other misconceptions about the Community Health Clinic of Butler County. Some folks feel that it somehow might be in competition with Butler Memorial Hospital. In fact, it's just the opposite, isn't it, John Rigetti?
And not only is it the opposite, but Butler Memorial Hospital and we have a very good relationship, and I think Butler Memorial Hospital relishes the fact that we exist. One, the community needs to know that Butler Hospital, Butler Health System, does provide every year a sizable contribution to help our operating expenses. So they clearly are making an investment for a reason. The other thing, too, I can tell you, a couple years, maybe about 3 or 4 years ago, we did a survey of our patients. Because where, if we didn't exist, where would these patients go for care? They would either go to a MedExpress or a Faster Care or to the hospital emergency room. And while the hospital emergency room is there 24 hours a day, it's very expensive care. Not for them, because they're not necessarily able to pay for the care. It's expensive for us as insured individuals and as a society overall. So, and it's expensive for the hospital because they're given expensive care and they're not going to get reimbursed for it in most of the instances. So we did a survey with our clientele and said, we measured how many times they'd been to the hospital emergency room prior to becoming clinic clients and then afterwards. And their utilization of the emergency room had decreased by 75%. This was, in essence, so for we, Butler community, and for the hospital, saving more than $100,000, if not a couple $100,000 to the hospital's bottom line because of what we can, the care that we can provide.
Let's talk a little bit with Larry Berg. I'm sure, Larry, that you, as you look back on your community service with so many organizations over the decades, it must give you a feeling of satisfaction, knowing that you've helped. You've made a mark.
Well, I really don't look at it that way, because this whole award this time took me by surprise, because so many other people in the community are doing so much more. On every board I've served, every committee I've served, there are people doing a lot more in each of those organizations than I was doing. But the accumulation of all of this experience serving the community, I guess, looks like a lot, and maybe it was, but I'm really not doing much more than so many other people before me.
Spoken as you would expect Larry Berg to say. Absolutely. Of course. You know, when we think about he's the modesty at which you would expect from him. When we talk about Larry Berg's role in this clinic, you know, we've talked about the establishment of the clinic, but what you don't get is that, you know, when Jean Purvis was ready to establish this clinic, she came to see different people, and who she brought on board to assist her in those fundraising efforts was Larry Berg. So, quite honestly, it was Larry Berg's activity within the community, his trustworthiness, the people that knew that when Larry endorsed something, it was a value, that really helped to bring the between what Gene and Larry raised and what the hospital contributed. The dollars were there to open this clinic.
I have to tell you the best story, the most successful story, when Gene and I went around the community and into Pittsburgh with people with Butler connections. We went to one very fancy office in a very fancy business downtown. The owner lives in Butler County. And we knew him. We had known him socially. And we went down there, and we decided that, having learned from previous fundraising experiences, not to ask for a specific amount of money because it might be too little. They might be able to give more. So we went to this fellow, and we chatted for a few minutes, and then we made our pitch. We told all the reasons why we really needed his help to help support the clinic. And this fellow looked down and looked up, and I think he was playing us because he probably knew before we got there what his contribution was going to be. Then he looked at us and he said, "How about $100,000? And we almost fell on the floor because we expected maybe 25. Mm-hmm. But it's an indication of how the community has been so supportive of the health clinic. This was a unique organization, and this man, as many others did, understand the importance of it because of the crazy insurance reimbursement system in this country. So that was one of our great – Gene and I had a great time that day.
There was, of course, a tremendous need initially, starting from scratch. There was no physical location. There was no place. There was no equipment. There were no examination rooms. There were no examination tables. Mm-hmm. So there was a tremendous expense to get started.
Right. And once again, as a community effort, so what you have is the hospital getting on board. You have Gene and Larry out raising money to purchase and critical things. And then what you have is many of the trade unions in Butler County and other individuals volunteering their time to physically create the clinic, to put up the walls, to do the flooring, et cetera. And if you come to the clinic, all of those individuals and all of those organizations are recognized on the wall in the lobby. Because I have to tell you, I tell people all the time, I've worked in six counties in western Pennsylvania. I have never seen a county that continually pulls together to solve its own issues like Butler County does.
And Dave, that's the difference that Butler is. I've lived in seven different places before we came to Butler in 1964. And I've never seen a community and the people in the community so dedicated to public service. Because this is truly a special community. Now, the bigger cities that I lived in, St. Louis and Des Moines and New Orleans and places like that, the ones who do the volunteer work are the captains of industry. They're the presidents of banks and the presidents of big organizations. So little guys like me never had a chance to even try to help. So seeing younger people and people in, not in the towering positions as in the bigger cities, actually working to help make it a better community and just devote themselves to it is refreshing. And that's why Butler's so special.
I'm speaking of the community health clinic as if everyone knows where it is, and there are probably folks who do not.
And you're absolutely right. It's on Bonney Drive in East Butler, so it's right outside of town, and but relatively easy to get to. And mm-hmm. if you have transportation issues in getting to us, call us, and if we can help you resolve them, we'll certainly do that.
What if a person, or maybe they know someone who might be helped by the community health clinic, but they're not sure whether or not they qualify? Can they just call?
Absolutely. They should call us. Better to know right up front. You can call us. We have an admissions intake process where we do all the things about, you know, are you financially eligible for this? What are the issues within your particular case? And get you in as quickly as possible. I think we want everybody to know, and it's interesting, part of the reason why we like to talk to you on the radio and other places is you might not need this clinic, but your brother does, or your cousin does. I was talking to a woman in the Slippery Rock Business Association who's quite prominent and educating her about this, and she said to me, oh, my brother's eligible for this clinic. I have to tell him about this. Now, no one would ever think that, thinking who she was and the kind of position that she had. But it's really the spread of the word of mouth. Well, again, when we survey our patients and we say, how did you find out about us? Number one is the hospital, someone there refers them to us. Number two is word of mouth. So it's a very powerful tool for getting people to us. The one, however, I think issue that needs to be cleared up is this is to maintain health. This is like the alternative to a physician's office. So this is not a walk-in clinic.
Mm-hmm.
It's important for people to understand that. If you wake up with, you know, you're not in good shape or you have a swollen eye or a bum knee, this is not the place to come. It's not a free clinic for, you know, people with immediate emergent issues. You'd have to go to an urgent care concept or to the ER for that. But the other thing that's important that we really haven't talked a lot about is we raise all this money to run this clinic, but once you're a client in this clinic, you know what you pay for your services? Nothing. There are absolutely no charge for the care that we give, whether it's medical care, the behavioral health assessment, diabetes education, and the piece that we haven't even really talked about, we provide also free dental care for individuals as well.
All through the amazing dedicated work of volunteers for the most part. The Community Health Clinic of Butler County, a nice chance to help out in this fundraising event and a nice chance to honor Larry Berg, This coming Friday night, he'll be presented with the Gene B. Purvis Cornerstone Community Award at a dinner. And there are still a few tickets available, right, John?
Call me. Call the clinic and ask for John Rigetti.
Okay. Good to see you, John. Larry, good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you. Good to be back on these microphones again.
That's right. Yeah. Nice to shake hands. Hey, coming up later in the week, tomorrow we have guests from Sing Hosanna. We have lots of other stuff tomorrow, too. We're going to be, later in the week, we're going to be talking with Bill May, local historian. He's going to be doing a program later this week on the history of Butler's movie theaters. And also, among our other guests this week, the symphony artists. We're going to be broadcasting live on